We're talking about sad music this hour. I don't know about you, but personally I find the cello to be the saddest instrument. In fact, it's a truism in rock music industry. If you want to make a sad song, put a cello in it. But that's now. What about then? That's Pablo Casals recording in 1936, the opening of Bach's cello suites. Written in 1720, Bach's cello suites were almost lost to obscurity until a young Casals in the late 1800s brought them back. I sat down with Eric Siblin, author of The Cello Suites, to find out more about the fascinating story of how Pablo Casals resurrected Bach's cello.
It was 1890. Casals was a 13-year-old boy who was studying in Barcelona. He was playing nights in a café trio in order to pay for his education. And on one weekend, his father had come up from the nearby village of El Vendrell in Catalonia, Spain, visiting Pablo, and they were strolling around looking for sheet music that young Pablo might use for his burgeoning career as a café musician. And it was then that he literally accidented upon this old edition of the cello suites, and it immediately galvanized him. He was blown away by the fact that this music existed in the first place. The immortal Johann Sebastian Bach had written music for his instrument, for cello, and for cello alone. So he purchased the score, and immediately one imagines he was trying to decode it, and the music was coming alive in his imagination, and he cradled this sheet music, took it home as if it were a treasure, and started to methodically figure it out, something that had not been done with any success since perhaps 1720 when it was composed. Casals waited a good 12 years before summoning the courage to start performing these suites in public. And that was quite a revolutionary thing for any cellist to do. This happened at the very dawn of the 20th century, around 1901. And that marks the sort of the public rehabilitation and resurrection, if you like, of the cello suites.
What's fascinating in a way is that up until this point, they should not have been widely recognized. We think of Bach as the major composer of his time. I know there's a lot of argument about that. But here we are at the turn of the century, the beginning of the 20th century, and essentially no one has heard these things since Bach wrote them.
In fact, the answer to that question has a lot to do with the career of Bach. Although Bach is now up there in the pantheon with Mozart and Beethoven for us, and as you mentioned, it's inconceivable for us to imagine a time when Bach was not famous. In fact, there was a time when he was not famous in his own lifetime. Bach was very well known in his town. Leipzig was where he spent the last 27 years of his life. But beyond that, he was not a superstar composer. And that's largely explained by the fact that Bach was not a composer for opera. He never lived in a city that supported an opera house. And opera was really the road to major fame in the 18th century. So Bach, by and large, was not famous in his lifetime, and it took a long time for his music to get back into circulation.
You hear some of these things in the music. The way you describe it in the cello suites, the book that you've written, is pretty clear. His falling for his first wife, Barbara, Maria Barbara. His falling, like, as you say, a ton of medieval masonry for Anna Magdalena Bach. In fact, you've structured the book around the sections of the music, but it's the preludes that seem to have captured your attention. What is it you said, that each of the preludes is the essence of the story?
I very quickly found myself looking at this music as if it were a story and a series of stories. Each of the suites have their own quite unique personality, and I think you sense that most compellingly in the prelude of each suite, which very much feels like an exercise in storytelling. It also has a very loose improvisational quality, the preludes of each suite. It's hard not to get a sense of a journey, I think, when you listen to the preludes. However relaxed and loose they may begin, They very much embark upon a journey with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
This first prelude, the one in the first suite, it is the thing that brings you to a desire to hear all of the other six. What would you say about that very first prelude of the first suite?
It sounds very much like a string player warming up at the very beginning. It also has a sense of a journey, something almost wave-like. I think there's a sense of waves running through this. And for me, I always think back to a 13-year-old cellist, Pablo Casals, stumbling upon this music in a secondhand shop in Barcelona in 1890. Now, of course, Bach didn't write that into the first cello suite, but I think he did write a sense of youthfulness and optimism and a sort of leisurely, serendipitous milling about in an improvisational sense.
Part of the thing that's interesting about this is that this is, after all, a solo instrument we're talking about, one that has four strings attached to a box. And we're talking about it, though, as though the music comes alive in the hands. And that's all Bach. I mean, yes, of course, the performer, but he had to put this music into a form, and it's so limited in what he's available to him that it's astonishing what he was able to accomplish with it.
Yes, I think that that's one of the themes of this music, is that how much Bach accomplishes with so little. It's really exquisite minimalism, and he bursts the boundaries, I think, of what the cello can accomplish and what a melody instrument can accomplish. He insinuates all sorts of things. He plants seeds of successive ideas, and there's a lot going on, even though you've got four strings and one bow. There's no question that Bach is taking the cello to sort of incredible and unprecedented heights, both technically and emotionally. For me, it's very hard not to listen to, for example, the second cello suite and not get a sense of tragedy. It really begins with these three notes that are really quite dark and ominous. And when you match that up against when it was likely written and what was going on in Bach's career, it's hard not to think that, in fact, this has something to do with the death of Bach's first wife, Maria Barbara. Suite number three, by contrast, kicks off on such an upbeat, effervescent note. It's, in fact, a downward scale, a kind of a tumbling into love, that, again, it's hard for me not to see Bach falling in love for Anna Magdalena. Suite number four has got a real sense of struggle, and it actually contains a very exotic, nearly Near Eastern sort of flourish. And suite number five, again, conveys a tremendous sense of mystery with a dramatic curtain raising and a sense that something really ominous is about to happen. And that takes us finally to suite number six, where the prelude I'm speaking of is transcendent. It really bursts the bounds of everything that's come before. And in fact, for suite number six, Bach is using a five-stringed instrument, not even a four-stringed instrument, perhaps not even a cello. This is one of, I think, many mysteries that surrounds this music. What was that instrument? And how transcendent Bach gets by the time he's at suite number six.
Eric, you had a fairly successful career as a critic of pop music. How did you move from that to a fascination with Bach's cello suites?
Well, I didn't wake up in the morning and decide to discover Bach or to discover anything. It was really quite by happenstance. I found myself in Toronto one evening, staying at a hotel with nothing to do, and I scanned the listings of a local newspaper and saw that the cello suites by one Johann Sebastian Bach were being performed just across the street at a venue not far away. And for reasons that still escape me, I took a chance on that music. It was not something I was in the habit of doing at all. The result really was life-changing for me. I was immediately swept away by what I heard, And I think more to the point, I was intrigued by what I learned about the music. The program notes pointed to several mysteries in the music. The fact that Bach's original manuscript disappeared sometime after his death in 1750, the fact that the music was unheard of in a popular sense until a 13-year-old cellist by the name of Pablo Casals stumbled upon them in 1890 in Barcelona while out for a walk with his father. The fact that Suite No. 6 was written for a mysterious five-stringed instrument. Suite No. 5 was written for the lute as well as the cello and dedicated to a mysterious Monsieur Schuster about whom nothing was known. All of this taken together led me to think that there not only was this music more earthy and ecstatic than anything I'd really ever heard before, but that there was a story there somewhere in the music. And when I left the concert hall that evening, I think I had this very strong suspicion that there was a story there I wanted to pursue.
Eric Sibelin is the author of The Cello Suites, J.S. Bach, Pablo Casals, and The Search for a Baroque Masterpiece. All of the music we heard was recorded by Pablo Casals in 1936 and 37.